Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the August 2nd, 2020 session, focusing on Genesis 32, verses 22 through 32, Fighting and Striving. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm David Adams.
And I'm Crystal Shepherd.
I forgot to think of a thing for us to talk.
Certainly on vacation.
I'm gone.
if you were on vacation, where would you be?
All right. So, dear listeners, yes, I am leaving on vacation in the morning. And it's just like senioritis, I think. It just creeps up on you ahead of time and your brain stops functioning. Although mine was on the edge anyway. But yeah, maybe we'll let this be our small talk, how our brains stop functioning as we...
I have diminishing returns throughout the day.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I sleep, I get it back, and then diminishing returns throughout the day.
Well, and for Regina and I, often it's, who is going to be the first one during the day to go, what day is it today? Oh, right. And we mean day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. The quarantine has got everything messed up on that. It's hard to remember.
Yes, I think so.
I rely heavily on lists so I can remember things. If I don't have a list, it doesn't, it leaves, it goes away.
That's a good approach.
I filed my returns back in February and they haven't come back yet. You can take that many ways.
Well, however you are coping with this weird time we are living in, I hope your brain is functioning better than mine. But thankfully, we have three other wonderful brains that are on the podcast today. And I'm going to expect them to save me from myself. So we were chuckling earlier because we've been doing Faith Element long enough that we have worked through the lectionary more than once. And we, three times. Oh, my goodness.
Three times.
Nikki's holding up three fingers. So. And so I actually, before we got started, pulled up a video from 2011 when we did this same passage. So, but you haven't changed a bit, Nikki. So,
Yeah.
So, and just as insightful, yes, just as insightful. So, well, Crystal, would you be able to help us get started with this one?
Sure. Today's introduction will be shared on my birthday, August 2nd. I find it fitting that the scripture is from Genesis 32 and discusses the famous wrestling match that Jacob has with God. I've spent the better part of my years wrestling God for control of my life and my will. That has taken some interesting turns. Like the time I was certain God wanted me to go on a summer project in Santa Cruz, California, but you see, I had a fear of flying, and I didn't want to be that far from home. So I put Branson, Missouri as my first choice. The moment that envelope left my fingertips and slipped into the mail slot, I was sick. Round 1 million of my lifelong battle with God had begun. Needless to say, the sickness didn't let up to the point I had to call the organization and beg them to change my first choice to Santa Cruz. I can look back over my life and see oh so many times I would wrestle God. I have tried to control people, places, and things in an attempt to get what I want and do what I think is best. Somehow, though, I've always walked away limping. Out of that contending with God, I was changed. Today we find another wrestler, Jacob, the master manipulator, the stealer of birthrights, the cunning supplanter. I mean, if you want a WWE rival, he would be your man. Most of us know how Jacob was crafty. He had charm, and he beguiled his brother's inheritance right out from under him. I mean, Esau made it so easy. He fled from Esau, but now he is on his way back with all his wealth and all that he loves. What does he do? He stalls. He puts as many people and possessions between him and Esau as he can. He has run and dodged for the better part of his life, and he is still trying to, even though he knows that Esau is coming to him and the metaphorical bill is due. He gets up in the cover of darkness and sends his wives and children and all that he has ahead of him, and he is left alone. It is in that moment alone that God comes and wrestles with Jacob. Jacob has to contend with his own heart as well as the might of God. Jacob tended to go head first and do things on his own. God was challenging Jacob to a different way. In this, one of the oldest and most significant parts of Genesis, what we see is that Jacob enters a crisis, and he comes out a changed man. In the midnight wrestling match, it was likely unclear whether it was Esau in a surprise attack or someone else. It becomes evident when his adversary doesn't yield or kill him that something supernatural is at play. Jacob had earlier prayed to God with no response, and now here God is in person. God is adversarial and pushes Jacob to the point of breaking. It is in that incredible moment of sheer limit that Jacob receives his new identity from God, Israel, meaning God prevails. To this point, Jacob had asked for God's help in getting what he wanted. Now he is humbled and takes the blessing that God gives. He receives a new name, a new purpose, and he walks with a limp. He has striven with God and with men his whole life. He couldn't overcome God, but he held on for dear life and pled for a blessing. One commentary says, "Here the encounter left him pondering over what it meant, dreading its consequences, but acknowledging its validity. Now he knew himself, his inner soul. Never again could he be satisfied with material things and a multitude of children. He must have God." Isn't that such a succinct way to describe what happens to us when we strive with God? My wrestling matches kept on and on until the last 2 years, when I contended with multiple losses, left a job that I held onto way too long, encountered pain and struggle in my personal life, and dealt with the alcoholism of two people whom I love very dearly. In that, I found my way to a recovery group for relatives and friends of alcoholics. It was there I learned phrases like let go and let God, and to turn my life and will over to the care of my higher power. I didn't realize it until recently that that had been my blessing. I had held on for dear life, begging God for a blessing, and now it was time to let go and trust that my God would take care of things. Wounds healed, new friendships formed. I learned so much about myself and who I am. So much still hurts, like it does for each of us. It could be a loss of a job during the pandemic, an awakening to how racism has influenced our lives, or anxiety that creeps in over the what-ifs of the world. We all walk with a limp. Sometimes the blessing is what is named, and sometimes it's in the limp.
It's hard to hear that these days and not go really negative really fast. Isn't that sad? It's a sign of our times. It's like that. Because we, and maybe it's because I just preached on this, I don't know, but we have a society that's so sure of what they need for themselves and what they want for themselves. And what I want right now is way more important than things like stopping to care about other people or to treat other people the way God is taught me I'm supposed to treat other people. And because of that, we suffer. Yeah, I pointed out in my sermon, we are, you look at the rest of the world, all the other countries are getting back to business, sort of. Their kids are going to go back to school. They're playing sports. They're doing things. But we politicize things, and we let things be what we wanted them to be. And so now we're about to suffer greatly as a society. You know, because we wrestled with God on that one. We wrestled with, no one can tell us what to do. And our wanting to wrestle has now gotten us into a world of trouble. And we're going to be limping really hard from the looks of things. Is that too negative just to go there all of a sudden?
Hey, man, it's 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like we wrestled and we lost.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Well, yeah.
I don't think there's any way you're going to win in this kind of wrestling, though, is there? I mean, God's going to win. It's just a matter of how much damage God's going to have to do to us before God wins.
I come at the this passage, I think I come at this passage a little differently, but maybe it's the same thing. I'm not sure. So I see Jacob's choice to engage in wrestling with this character that shows up, because the scripture is a little ambiguous. I love that it leaves it open to who it could be. Tradition absolutely says that it's God. And at the end, Jacob says, I've seen the face of God. And so that's why we say Jacob wrestled God. But there are commentators who have other takes on it. So Jacob chooses to engage this opponent in wrestling. And I see his choice in this text as completely different from the way that he has behaved in the rest of his narrative. In the rest of his narrative, he comes at people sideways. He's manipulative. He's secretive. He uses charm to get what he wants. He uses he lies to get what he wants. He comes at everything sideways, and he does everything that he can to avoid the pain that, or the risk that comes with conflict. And here, he chooses to take on the risk, and he chooses to finally engage someone else outright, face to face, and take on the risk of that. And he reaps the risk of that. He's injured in the fight. And I think that there is something in this particular text in which Jacob's choice to finally engage is a sign of the transformation that's happening for him. I don't know. This is one of my most favorite stories, and I think it's because no matter how you slice it, there is something that it can teach us, kind of at every level. So I don't know. What do y'all do with that? Does that resonate? Does that feel fair to the text?
I think it's fair. The only downer to the whole thing for me is that it doesn't tell us where this person came from. You're not introduced into the narrative. It's just Jacob was alone and a man wrestled with him. Mm-hmm. Well, that's really sketchy.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I'm used to Jacob having a little bit of a build up and some story about how he encountered this guy and he had to figure out how to get past this guy. And so he thought he's going to sneak around it. But no, not Jacob. This time he actually fought the guy. Mm-hmm. But we're not told that. We just said Jacob was alone and somebody wrestled with him. Like, who's this guy? He's sort of like that.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, he's that extra character in all the Hallmark movies who's there for no good reason, and you wonder why he's in the film.
Some scholars suggest that it's Esau. Hmm. Because at the end of the wrestling, he says, I have seen the face of God and I have prevailed. And then when he sees Esau, he says, seeing your face is like seeing the face of God because of the favor I have found with you. And so there's this wonderful connection between who he wrestles with and what he says to the person he wrestles with and what he says to Esau when he meets him. I like that. I don't know that the text, that's completely fair to the text, but I like the idea of it.
But what you said makes me think about how, like, in that wrestling, he survived, right? He had a limp, but he survived. And so, like, if he could survive that, then he could survive facing Esau. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like the struggle taught him something about himself. It changed the way that he viewed himself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what I was pulling out in that, like, our struggles, whether it's contending with God or just in life circumstances, I think the way in which we choose to handle adversity, the way that we choose to deal with the struggle, teaches us something about ourselves.
Yeah.
And about God. Mm. And I think what I was trying to tap into is that we're like Jacob. We want to control things. And I think that's what David was alluding to earlier. Like, we've made choices in this country. Mm-hmm. We're trying to control the situation in a less than helpful way. And that's a nice way of putting it, I guess. It's hard with this text because I think part of it is that Jacob held on, right? He faced that struggle and he faced that fear.
Right.
But then you also say that, like, he didn't overcome, if it's God or an angel or whatever it is, whoever it is that he wrestles with, he didn't overcome. Mm-mm. He held on.
He held on, right.
And so I think that's for us, like, we tend to look at our struggles, like, we're overcoming, and it's like, I feel like sometimes I just hold on for dear life and be like, dear Lord, help me get out of this.
Right.
And so I think that's the kind of the route I was coming around to was, there's something about holding on, but there's something about letting go, if that makes sense.
In holding on, he chose to let go of the need to control.
Yes.
You think, is that, I mean.
That's where I'm at. Yeah. I don't know if that's true to the text.
I like it. No, I think it is good. And I think what I love is when he chooses to do that, he finally gets a blessing that belongs to him. It's not one that he's stolen from anybody else, but he says, I want you to bless me. And when I think, like, he's getting prepared to go meet Esau, the person who he stole a blessing and a birthright from. And so he has carried this blessing and birthright that was never intended for him. And so in this wrestling match, he finally gets that blessing that belongs to him. And I think that in that, as he learned himself, as he figured out how to let go of that need to control, then he was finally prepared to go and meet Esau. I think he needed that before he could go home and see Esau and make amends.
Well, and I also like that there's a little bit of woundedness there. The therapist in me, that there's something, there's this, he can't fake it. He can't muster, he doesn't have the same amount of strength that he had before physically to face Esau.
Mm-hmm.
But he has the spiritual strength to go do it, I think. And I think that it kind of shows me that when we do have these struggles in life, I talk with my clients about scars. Scars remind us of the pain, but they're wounds that have healed. And it's a helpful reminder. And I wonder if the limp for him was not that you would forget wrestling with God or an angel or whatever, but like, I wonder if that limp stayed with him the rest of his life or not. There's like in the commentary, they talk a little bit about, you know, several chapters later, he seems like he's just fine. He's healing. But it makes me wonder if he's got that lingering pain there that reminds him, hey, like you've changed. Don't go back to the old way. You have changed.
Yeah. It's like this is the start of a new and improved Jacob. Mm-hmm. The old Jacob was somebody who avoided conflict, and sometimes he got other people to do his conflict for him.
True.
He manipulated in things. And now new Jacob is a kind of Jacob who has to hang on for dear life, and there is nobody. Because right, it says Jacob was left alone. Mm-hmm. So here he is holding on for dear life, and yeah, he gets hurt a little bit, but he realizes in all this that he does not need to be manipulating people anymore and have them step in. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a little bit wounded, but it's a good kind of wounded, and it's not so bad having to hang on for yourself for a change. Mm-hmm. And right, as he faces his mean brother, as he thinks is the mean brother, maybe this is that moment that now new Jacob is facing old Esau instead of old Jacob. Mm. And things can happen now.
Mm. David, that takes me back to what you said at the beginning and kind of where you went with this. And this, we have here, you know, in our country, we've found ourselves in this pandemic situation, and we're not in a good place because we, like, as you said, we've made it about, we've politicized it and made it partisan. And if we're connecting that to old Jacob, in a sense, like what got us here, there's a need to to try and control how things come out. Right. Like, and there's no controlling this pandemic.
Now, and there's an archetype in here too, you know, and it kind of speaks to this because we have this archetype of how everybody likes the bad boy, put it that way. Yeah, you know, the manipulative person who gets what they want and is supposed to be cooler than everybody else, like old Jacob was.
Sure.
You know, everybody likes that, but there's a cost to supporting that kind of behavior.
Mm.
You know, and eventually you got to pay the cost. And even Jacob got a limp out of it. He had to pay the cost for his own behavior eventually when he changed. Mm-hmm. But there's always a cost associated with liking the bad boy and having a society that pushes that image where the bad boy is actually a good thing to be. Mm. So now you're going to have to be somebody who takes a wound occasionally and has to just, as they say here, hold on until you prevail. Because that's ultimately what God's calling us to be.
Mm. I have to wonder about the choice of wrestling. whoever this person was, right?
Right.
Who showed up to be the wrestling partner. It's not sword fighting. It wasn't pounding each other with clubs. Mm. It wasn't spears that they were stabbing each other with or knives or...
Jarts.
Wrestling is it's an interesting form of struggle, right? That has the potential. Genuinely, if you've ever wrestled, I wrestled just a little bit whenever I was in high school because I had to. It was like part of physical ed, and you really struggle. I always lost because I was a little guy, but you learn a lot in the struggle, but it's not usually a lethal thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like what was that movie where Jim Carrey played the Joker? It was a Batman movie, and he said, "If you kill him, he won't learn nothing."
right.
But the struggle, as I hear us discussing this, it if we are willing to learn, it can be something that teaches us about ourselves, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And God.
Right, this is where they introduced all these character sayings into sports. You know, about how you're revealing your character by how you play the game, kind of.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think so often our religion teaches us that we're supposed to not struggle and we're supposed to, it's supposed to bring comfort. But I think that that's not the only thing that is a part of a life of faith. And I think that inherent to a life of faith, because faith is not something that can be proven, it is something that we choose to follow or believe in spite of evidence against it, or in spite of a lack of evidence to prove it. And so I think inherent in being a person of faith means you have to struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times our faith traditions, at least the ones that I have been the most connected to, don't celebrate that part of faith or teach how to do it. And it doesn't mean that there's one way to do it. But I do think that if we had examples of what struggle looks like in faith in that process, that it would be easier for us to engage and it would be a less scary thing to engage.
Well, to see it as a natural part of growing, right?
Right,
so,
right.
I don't know if you've ever seen a slow motion video of a seed that sprouts and pushes itself up, and then it hits the edge of the soil, which typically has a crust on it. And it has to push, and you can see it working, and then finally it bursts through. And I just think it's both a simple image of this need for life to move and to grow, but that it's not. That it doesn't have to burst through the surface, right?
Mm, right.
And there is that moment where it pauses while it's pushing and struggling against that. And then when it bursts forth, there's sunlight and there's water and there's air. And to think that our growth would be any different, I think, is folly.
But we're kind of taught that that's not appropriate.
Right.
It's probably not good that we're taught that, but we're always taught, well, you're not supposed to struggle with God. You're supposed to accept things as they are. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to be this sense of struggle, because that means doubt and stuff like that's entering in. You know, we teach that to people, maybe not in so many words, but sometimes we do in so many words. And on the other side of this, we also teach that God is supposed to be so wholly other from us and so distant from us that we can't have this kind of intimate struggle that wrestling implies, where the two people gripping each other.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to have that close relationship with God. We can't be having these doubts. We can't be questioning what God tells us. We can't be doing that. Mm. But this is precisely what Jacob needs to grow, and to have a faith.
Right. Oh, no, I was just going to say, if you ever watched that, like, MMA fighting on when they get in the cage and the guys, like, and it's, like, hand-to-hand. Like, I just say, like, this proves to me that guys need good friends that'll hug them. Because, like, yeah, that's what that is. It looks like just a big hug. Yeah. And so, and I think, you know, it is, wrestling with someone is a very intimate experience, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that I love that the image of the plant bursting through the soil is just stuck in my brain. It was such a perfect image for this. But I think that Jacob he needed the struggle, as David said, and it is the struggle. It is because of the struggle that he receives the blessing. If he had chosen not to engage in the struggle, that blessing wouldn't come.
Right.
And it's like, you have to do that in order to find your way to the blessing, to bursting forth out of the soil, to, you know,
sunlight
and water and air and all that, to burst out of the darkness and the, mm-hmm, the metaphors are just flowing. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Crystal?
Well, a couple of things. You talking about that, I'll save that. Well, before that, I was going to say, people who think that faith is not about struggle, I would invite them to read stories of the saints. Mm. I would invite them to not just saints that were like not a million, a kabillion years ago or whatever, but like saints that are now, people that we consider pillars of faith now, and see the struggle that's there for them. The other thing, when you're talking about all these metaphors, like I just keep thinking about, and I've talked about it on here before, about the butterfly. And the caterpillar, mm-hmm, when it goes into the cocoon, it literally is ripped apart. It turns, mm-hmm, into goo.
Yeah.
And then
it's
so
liquefied,
there's that,
almost.
There's that. It's liquefied. But everything that is needed to be the butterfly is inside the caterpillar. But it takes that process of the being in the cocoon and being in that place of solitude and struggle. And then it becomes a butterfly, but it has another struggle because it has to break out of the cocoon. And if it can't adequately break out of the cocoon, its wings are not strong enough to fly. Mm. And so, like, for me, it's like we have to struggle. Like, struggle is built into the DNA of creation. And so I think if it's built into the DNA of creation, it is built into us. And so we are, dare I say, meant to struggle in some ways. That's how we grow.
Mm. Well, Methodist minister Jan Richardson, do y'all know?
I've heard of her Jan, and her work? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've probably heard of her book. I had it, now I've forgotten it. Man, my brain really is gone. the Painted Prayer Book, maybe, is what you've heard. But she has written a poem that I thought we would close with called Jacob's Blessing. So let me share that with you as a way of wrapping things up. If this blessing were easy, anyone could claim it. As it is, I am here to tell you that it will take some work. This is the blessing that visits you in the struggling, in the wrestling, in the striving. This is the blessing that comes after you have left everything behind, after you have stepped out, after you have crossed into that realm beyond every landmark you have known. This is the blessing that takes all night to find. It's not that this blessing is so difficult, as if it were not filled with grace or with the love that lives in every line. It's simply that it requires you to want it, to ask for it, to place yourself in its path. It demands that you stand to meet it when it arrives, that you stretch yourself in ways you didn't know you could move, that you agree not to give up. So when this blessing comes, born in the hands of the difficult angel who has chosen you, do not let go. Give yourself into its grip. It will wound you, but I tell you, there will come a day when what felt to you like limping was something more like dancing as you moved into the cadence of your new and blessed name. Jan Richardson, that's from The Cure for Sorrow, a book of blessings for times of grief. Wonderful conversation. Thank you all for it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.